In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
How many times since 2010 have we heard, if only, out of the Republicans? That if only we had the Congress, we could do something. Then it was, if only we had the Senate. If only we had the presidency. You've probably heard it so many times, you're sick of hearing it. The Republicans have everything. Everything. The presidency, the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court. There is nothing stopping them from accomplishing everything they promised. Obamacare, taxes, immigration, the wall. It doesn't have to be perfect. Just get the ball moving. Show people what lower taxes mean. Let them see more money in their own pockets. Get more wins next time and make it even better. But don't just stand there, stupid. Do something. The problem isn't the Republican Party. You need majority control to do things. The problem is these Republicans. The way to fix that is to primary them out. Get rid of Paul Ryan. Replace them. Not with Democrats, but true Republicans who want to get things done. Build the wall. Don't be a wall. Coming up, we'll talk with Paul Nealon, who is running as a Republican against Paul Ryan, so stay tuned for that. But first up, Brendan Kirby to talk about one of those Republican promises, immigration, and some surprising developments there. I'd like to welcome Brendan Kirby, a senior political reporter at LifeSet.com. He has three articles up there that we'd like to focus on, all centered around illegal immigrants. Congress plots to sneak legal immigration hike into spending bill. Illegal border crossings rise for the fourth straight month, and compromised colleges operating as massive visa mills. That last one, terribly explosive. Brendan, welcome back to the show.
Hey, great to be here.
So let's start with that first one, Congress plotting to sneak a hike in legal immigration into a spending bill. Give us the essence of what's going on here.
Well, the essence is America has all sorts of non-immigrant visa programs that allow people, temporary guest workers to come into the country, and there's lots of different categories of this. One is for low-skill, non-agriculture workers, and that is called the H-1A visa. And it's for people working jobs like landscaping and other jobs that are not agriculture because they've got their separate program. And it's capped. There's only a certain number by law you can admit each year. So one of the ways Congress has gotten around this before is by slipping provisions in the spending programs that will allow companies to exceed that cap for instance, returning workers, people who have had this status before and want to come back. They won't count that. And what we're seeing now with this big spending package that Congress is gearing up for the next fiscal year is a provision that would extend this program to dairy workers, which are not a part of this program now. And there's some farm state, dairy state lawmakers that want to make it easier for dairy businesses to hire foreign labor.
I can't help but notice that one of those dairy states is Wisconsin, where Paul Ryan is from.
Yeah, and I imagine Paul Ryan probably supports this provision, although I haven't gotten an on-the-record comment from him, but generally he has been receptive to these kinds of programs. There's another provision in this bill that was inserted by Representative Andy Harris from Maryland that would give seafood processors more flexibility in using the H-2B visas. That wouldn't expand the number, but it would make it easier for them to use it. There's another. This is probably the most damaging of all. There's a provision in the spending bill that would, because currently under the H-2B visa, you have to show as a business that you've tried to hire American workers and have failed, and this is sort of a last resort, and you have to pay the prevailing wage, which is a safeguard against people just, businesses just bringing in low-wage labor from abroad. And so they have to pay what's called the prevailing wage, which currently is determined by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Well, this proposed change would let companies substitute industry surveys to make this determination, which, as you might imagine,
yeah.
the industry surveys are probably going to show a lower prevailing wage.
So yeah.
that's another trouble. And this is all very under the radar stuff. It's shoehorned into these giant must-pass spending bills, and they don't get a lot of attention like they would if someone were just to propose a change of the law.
Yeah, so basically they are it's a way around standard practices where, you know, you would normally pay somebody X amount, but now they're going to be able to use their own little internal surveys that say, gee, all of our illegal immigrants say that they'll do this for a buck an hour. That's the standard that we're going to use.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not quite as simple as that, because they have to show, they have to pay the prevailing wage as it exists now, not what not whatever someone is willing to work for. But if the Bureau of Labor Statistics says, okay, in your industry, in your part of the country, the prevailing wage to do this work is $10 an hour, and the industry can use a different survey with different methodology and say, no, it's really $8 an hour, this would let companies be able to rely on that. So it would let them hire foreign laborers who would be willing to do it, and it would just, you know, they'd be able to. Because if they had to pay the prevailing wage, then the impetus to do it is not as great. You know,
right.
if I'm not saving any money to do it, I might as well hire an American.
Exactly. Why not hire an American? And in fact, that's it just seems like, once again, Congress is trying to bypass the will of the American people. I think the vast majority of people would prefer that American companies hire American people. I don't know why that's so difficult for some of these guys to understand.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it should be noted that I think there probably are legitimate instances in certain industries in certain parts of the country where the employment rate is you know, the unemployment rate is so low that it actually is hard to find Americans, and that's why these programs are supposed to exist. And Congress put limits on most of them, on the numbers that you can bring in these stringent requirements to try to prevent abuses and prevent it from being turned into just a scheme to drive down wages of American workers. And, you know, the more you chip away at it by raising the numbers or by loosening the standards by which it's governed, then the more you invite these sorts of abuses. And this is really, I mean, the ironic thing is this is something Republicans and Democrats generally hate, you know, both just regular citizens and lawmakers. Democrats, who are very open to lots of open borders initiatives on these guest worker programs, you know, they're as tough as Charles Grassley on a lot of this stuff. So this should be something that should be blocked. And if you were just to propose a bill, hey, I want to make this change in the way the prevailing wage is calculated, it would never pass. That's why you tuck it into a spending bill, because then it just slips through with everything else.
Yep, sneak it through. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. More with Brendan Kirby, a political writer with LifeZette. That's LifeZette.com. And welcome back. We have a split show for you today. Right now we're talking with Brendan Kirby, a senior political reporter for LifeZette. That's Laura Ingraham's site, LifeZette.com. About three of his articles, all centered around immigration. And then in the second half of our show, we'll be talking with Paul Neelan, who is running against Paul Ryan. Stay tuned for that. So, Brendan, we kind of almost have to talk about DACA with the events of this week. That's the delayed action for childhood arrivals, the so-called Dreamers, or simply and perhaps more accurately, children of illegal immigrants. Trump met with Democrat leaders, and afterwards Pelosi and Schumer claimed they'd won on DACA and that there was there wasn't going to be any funding for the wall. In a Periscope video, which we'll link up on today's show page at iSpyRadio.com, Scott Adams calls DACA an imaginary asset because there was no chance that we were ever going to send back children who've lived here and think they're American. And in fact, Trump has often said that himself, that you know, he's very sympathetic to the Dreamers, and that Trump then traded that for something tangible, meaning the wall. So what are your thoughts on these developments? Do you share Scott Adams' take that this is all negotiating tactics at play?
Well, it could be, except that it's not really clear what Trump wants, other than he wants increased border security, it seems. And sometimes he talks about a wall, and sometimes he says, well, we need the wall, but not part of this deal. So probably what's emerging here is something that would include, you know, maybe more money for Border Patrol officers and for technology, drones, that sort of thing. And my take, and I agree with the immigration hardliners on this, if that's your trade, it's a pretty foolish trade because, you know, one, if it were border wall funding, if I'm Chuck Schumer, I do that in a heartbeat. Okay, I'll give you 1 year of funding for a wall that will probably never get built in exchange for a permanent amnesty. That's not a very good deal. And even enforcement isn't a very good deal. What is more needed, according to a lot of the experts I've talked to, is something on the legal immigration front, something that would mitigate the impact of the amnesty of the Dreamers. Because remember, once you become a citizen, it's not just you, it's your extended family. Because of our family-sponsored migration policies that we have, you can then sponsor for your relatives back in Mexico or Guatemala, wherever you came from, to come here. And it's not just immediate family members. You can bring uncles and aunts, and then they can sponsor their own. So pretty soon, this 690,000, you know, DACA recipients, you know, becomes a couple million.
Yeah.
And especially, potentially, maybe even their parents, who are the ones who did make the affirmative decision to break the immigration laws and come in. You know, if they're granted, technically by law, they should be barred from being able to be sponsored for permanent residency. But a sympathetic future administration might grant hardship waivers or other mechanisms to let them come in. So, you know, the people I've talked to, they say, if we're going to have a deal on this admittedly sympathetic population, we have to do it in such a way that it will limit the damage. And one thing Senator Rand Paul suggested in conjunction with that is, if we do this, let's count it against the caps on regular immigration. So we issue 1 million green cards a year, rather than just adding this to that, deduct from that million annual total so that the numbers stay the same. I think that's something a lot of conservatives would support. But if it's just sort of an open-ended amnesty and you don't really get anything in return except for some lip service on the border, I think it's going to be controversial.
Yeah, I definitely think it would be controversial. And I guess my problem with just waiving this without any kind of ramifications is, what other area of law do we ever allow children to benefit from the illegal activities of their parents? We don't. Children of bank robbers don't get to keep the proceeds of robbing the bank. And so there has – plus, to me, the real issue is, though, is sending the message to foreigners who are considering doing this. I mean, we saw a wave of children coming across the border when Obama first issued this. The reason we have some of these Dreamers is because of DACA, that opened the door to a lot of kids being sent here by their parents that were then swept up by these refugee centers and whatnot. And I think if we just don't do anything to address the underlying legal issues of DACA, we're just going to get another wave once this current one is dealt with. However,
there's no question that amnesty, and not just in an immigration context, but any context, if you grant amnesty, it immediately creates appetite for the next amnesty. I took a high school class trip years ago to France, and there were cars parked all over the place in the city, you know, on the streets, on the sidewalks, in the middle of the streets. And we asked our tour guide, what the heck is going on with this? And she said, oh, well, in Paris, we have a tradition that every time the new mayor is elected, he comes in and he grants amnesty to all old parking tickets. And everybody knows that. So as a result, nobody obeys the parking law.
Oh, my word. Oh, my word. Well, you've got a really fascinating article there. This one is Illegal Border Crossings Rise for Fourth Straight Month. And, of course, we'll link this up on iSpyRadio.com on today's show page. There was a huge dip in February, and overall border crossings are way down from Obama's last full year and down 77% from the average Obama years going back to 2012. And yet they've been creeping up for four straight months. So what's going on down on the border, and why the increase?
Yeah, well, what we saw, first let's get to the decrease. There was a huge plummet, as you noted. As soon as Trump became president, the numbers immediately started to decline from what they were in the Obama years, and they declined every month until they finally hit a low in April, 15,771, which is a very low number historically compared to what we've seen over the last decade. It's hard to really point to any change, especially immediately. Trump takes the oath of office. He hasn't even gotten his appointees in place. His executive order hasn't taken effect. We don't have any more border agents. We don't have a wall. Everyone pretty much attributes that to the Trump rhetoric. He says we're just not going to tolerate illegal immigration. That sends a signal south of the border, and it discourages illegal immigration. But then what you see is eventually when people see that, well, there actually is no wall, and if I get to the United States, I'm probably not going to be sent back. So then it starts to go up again. So it's increased four straight months from April to August. And so there's, you know, this month is the last month of the fiscal year. So the good news is we're going to finish this fiscal year with the lowest total in six years.
Way down.
The bad news is that's probably not sustainable until the policy actually changes.
Right.
Until we get serious about adding detention space so that we detain people rather than release them while they fight their deportation, until we do better workplace enforcement to discourage companies from hiring illegal immigrants in the first place, border barriers, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, and fixing DACA for sure. So, all right, let's go ahead and take a break. Coming up, in my opinion, Brendan's most shocking article, colleges handing out visas to illegals. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking about immigration today with Brendan Kerbet. He's senior political reporter for LifeZet. That's LifeZette.com, LifeZette.com. All three of his articles we talked about today will be on today's show page at iSpyRadio.com. So we've saved the best for last, meaning most shocking, not like it's great news. You've got an article called Compromise Colleges Operating as Massive Visa Mills, and a study highlights how the Dregs of Higher Education act as end-run-around immigration system. So this is just completely under the radar. So what do you mean by a visa mill when referring to these colleges?
Sure. Well, you've probably heard of diploma mills, which are institutions of higher learning, quote-unquote, that aren't very rigorous and, they're kind of scam colleges, and they hand out diplomas in exchange for very little work and just collect a big check. This is sort of along the same lines of that, only it's the diploma isn't the big benefit, it's the visa, because a bunch of colleges, mainly in this group, a lot of for-profit colleges, some nonprofit colleges, their whole business model is based on foreign students who are not eligible for U.S. Student aid, so their parents have to pay the full rate, and the college can just collect the checks. And this story is based on a report this week by the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington that did a fantastic job looking into this. And there are 34 colleges, or rather 55 colleges that they call compromise colleges, and these are the visa mills. They were all accredited by an accrediting agency that is now defunct, because the Obama administration at the end of last year determined that their standards were so lax that the Department of Education wasn't going to recognize it anymore. So they've lost their accreditation, which means they have lost access to student aid, that kind of thing. They can't have federal financial aid to their students, the ones that are Americans, but they can still sponsor international students. And the way it works is this: they accept somebody from India or wherever in the world, and they issue them a form that they can go then take to their consulate office in their country and visit a U.S. State Department representative, who then issues a student visa. And that is their legal ticket into the United States. And then once here, they can try to get on the one of our guest worker immigration programs, like we talked about before, like the H-2B visa for high-tech workers, or something called OPT, which is a program that's supposed to be training for students after they've graduated, but is really just a work visa. Or if all else fails, they just stay, because about half of our illegal immigrants came legally one way or the other, and they just stayed after their visa expires. So it's a big problem. There's about the CIS counts about 40,000 international students who are going to one of these compromised colleges, even though the education they receive is suspect.
Well, I'm very surprised that Homeland Security isn't taking a harder look at this. And apparently, if I understand right, they are the ones that decide who can issue these. They're called I-20 applications. And I mean, this would be an open door if somebody wanted to get a terrorist in here, have them come across as a student through one of these defunct universities.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. In fact, we saw some of the 9/11 hijackers came to America on student visas. And, there's plenty of opportunities to abuse the system for just real colleges that are doing their job. But this makes it a lot easier. I mean, some of the colleges on this list don't even have classes during the week. They're only on weekend. You think of a big leafy college campus, and these tend to be outfits that rent some office space in a strip mall. These are the kinds of colleges we're talking about. And, you know, the way it works is it's, the State Department issues the visa, and they do some vetting and checking, but it's not really their primary responsibility to check up on the schools. The Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Education are supposed to ensure that these are legitimate colleges and, you know, can legitimately do this. Congress could probably tighten the rules because, as I said, it seems kind of strange that the accrediting agency's recognition has been pulled and these institutions are not even accredited colleges anymore. They can't get access to student loans, federal student loans, but they can still issue these I-20 forms and they still can sponsor international students to come into the country. So it's a big hole. What we see is a lot of times state regulators act to shut these colleges down, not for the immigration aspect so much, it's just it doesn't meet the standards of a legitimate college. And this Virginia board is about to do that to one of these schools.
Well, it is shocking that these haven't been shut down. I mean, like I said, it's a massive loophole for terrorists. But here's the real kicker, is that one of your interviewees there, North, said that hiring workers with OPT status is attractive to companies because, since they are considered students, even if they no longer attend classes, companies are exempt from paying Social Security and Medicare taxes on them. This OPT program in total costs those programs, meaning Social Security and Medicare, $2.5 billion a year that is not being paid into the system that ought to be. So once again, the rest of us are footing the bill for people gaming the system or coming here illegally.
Right. And again, because the whole idea of this program, the legitimate use of it, is this is supposed to be connected to your education in some way. So you're working for some outfit, but it's sort of on-the-job training as part of a degree. But the way we have interpreted it is this can apply after you've already received your degree. So you're not even a part of the requirement, I'm going to work for this company and I'm going to be supervised by my school and it somehow fits into my degree requirements. It's just a job. And it used to be 29 months. Now it's 3 full years that, up to 3 years you can stay on this. It's called the Occupational Training Program. And as you said, since it's not counted as a real job and it's sort of a school thing, they don't have to pay payroll taxes on you. So it's a savings to the company, and it's an incentive if you can save money by hiring a foreign OPT worker rather than an American. And these schools, by the way, are huge abusers of it, these compromised colleges. And just by way of an example, there's a college you've probably never heard of called Stratford University in Northern Virginia. And they received more OPT extensions from 2009 to 2013 than all 8 of the Ivy League schools combined.
Wow.
That tells you what a part of the business model this is.
Students
are looking to get in and being able to work. If they find out that the college will easily sponsor you for this OPT, that's a huge incentive. And then, of course, the college gets to cash the check.
Exactly right. There is tons more that you can read. We'll put all 3 of his articles up on iSpyRadio.com. Just look for this week's show page. Brennan, thank you so much for your time.
As always, thanks a lot.
And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. I'd like to welcome Paul Nealon to the iSpy Radio Show. Paul is a Wisconsin business executive with over 30 years of experience in manufacturing. As an inventor, he holds 7 patents in the United States, but most impressively, in the minds of many of you, he is running against Paul Ryan for the Republican nomination for Congress from Wisconsin 1st District. Paul, it's great to talk to you.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, so this is your second run of Paul Ryan. In your first attempt, the voters did go with Paul Ryan, although for your very first run, you managed to get over 10,000 votes, and that was a 6-1 margin. But what was really impressive is that even though that was 6-1, you were outspent 17-1. So aside from the funding, what was your analysis of what happened when you had so much national interest on you in that campaign?
Well, the thing that your listeners need to remember is we stopped Trans-Pacific Partnership, and that is why I ran this race. It would have been great to get the seat. Only one time, though, since 1950 in the whole state of Wisconsin has a primary challenger beat a sitting federal official, only once. I had well less than a 1% chance to win in my first go, but I ran anyhow because that Trans-Pacific Partnership was so bad. It was a terrible, terrible trade deal, and I wrote about it in my new book that was just released last month called Wage the Battle. You can find it on Amazon. I was endorsed by Ann Coulter on the front of the book. Top front of the book, it says, "You know President Trump wanted to endorse Paul Nealon." And I'll tell you what, I met President Trump, and I tell the story in the book, after my election and before his, he was so complimentary of me and my race and what we had done, and he encouraged me to run again. And so Paul Ryan, as you've seen, as we've all seen, he has done nothing but undermine his president.
No.
And so I am meeting every week with Wisconsin voters. I've had 9 public town halls in the last 8 weeks, and I have committed that I will hold one every week for the next year until the race in August of 2018, because it's that important. It's that important to the nation. As you said, you know, I've got a bunch of U.S. patents. I've run businesses all around the globe. I've largely put that on hold. In fact, I'm sitting here in front of some work I'm doing on a filtration design. But, you know, it's so imperative that this country be handed over to our kids and our grandkids better than we got it. And with people like Paul Ryan at the helm, that's not going to happen.
No. Well, he's a spineless weasel of a man, and I just am so frustrated. Here we have, you know, how many years did we hear that, oh, if we had the Congress, we could win, we could do stuff. Oh, if we had the Senate, we could get this done. Oh, but now we need the presidency. And still nothing is getting done. And I lay a lot of that at the feet of Paul Ryan, because he's the head of the House. That's really the heart and soul of the nation. The Senate, you know, that's another beast altogether. But the heart and soul of America resides in the House. America said we want to get things done, and Paul Ryan is stopping that. So looking at this from a businessman's standpoint, how are you going to overcome that deficit and like you say, win since the first time since the 50s or 60s?
Well, I learned a lot in that first run. You know, I did some things. I hired fast and fired slow because we had 4 months. This time I have 14 months. So I'm going with my business instincts, which is hire slow, fire fast. And now I've got the time to do that. So I am really running on a shoestring here. My wife and I and just a couple others really are the ones managing. I had 6 interviews yesterday. I've got 6 today. We're really doing it on a shoestring. And, you know, I love speaking to people around the nation who also acknowledge, as you just did, the House of Representatives is the people's house. That is our that was by design our closest mechanism to federal government. And when your elected representative comes back and they refuse to do public town halls, like Paul Ryan did a made for TV event with CNN. It wasn't a public town hall. He came back here and he got on TV, and he knew what questions were going to be asked because, A, you had to submit for a ticket through CNN, and, B, you had to submit questions. But that wasn't all. A buddy of mine got invited to the Paul Ryan fake town hall event, and he didn't have to submit a ticket. You know why? Because a CNN producer called him out of the blue. His cell phone rings with a New York City phone number. Answers the phone, and this woman announces herself as a CNN producer. She said, Paul Ryan's going to have a town hall, and I saw on your Facebook you said something about Obamacare. Could you turn that into a question? Would you be interested in asking that question of Paul Ryan? And he said, yeah, sure. She goes, submit 2 other questions, and we'll tell you what question you can ask the day of the event.
Wow.
Now you tell me.
That's not staged at all.
Town hall.
Yeah, really.
No. And when people realize that's how government's being run, it's being run by CNN. It's being run by people who are setting up these fake events. And I did a Facebook Live with Kevin, and I showed it here in the district, and I keep pumping it out because people can't believe that that's Paul Ryan. That's the guy that they've elected 9 times.
Hmm.
9 times. He's been there. He's going on his 19th year in Congress. That's the only job he's ever had. And except he drove the Wienermobile one day, as a lady here in Janesville pointed out to me.
Yeah, that's maybe really appropriate for Paul Ryan.
Yeah,
let's go ahead and take a break there. Save us a little more time for next segment. Everyone stay with us. We'll have lots more of Paul Nealon. He is running against Paul Ryan. Paul Nealon's website is paulnealon.com. Stay with us. And welcome back. Nice Buy Radio Show. We're talking today with Paul Nealon. He is a Wisconsin businessman who is running against spineless Paul Ryan for the Republican nomination for Congress. You know, what is it with Paul Ryan that he only shows spine when it's against something that the Republicans sent him their due?
I think it's a thirst for power. I think Paul Ryan fancies himself as the shadow president, or he feigns interest in power. But we see time and again he wields it deftly when it's for something he wants, like the Puerto Rico hedge fund investor bailout that he managed to pull off, which, by the way, is going to trip the Fifth Amendment tripwire, and the voters, the taxpayers, will be on the hook. You know, if that unelected board says, all you investors are going to take a haircut. Well, they have been spending that money on government paychecks. And the Fifth Amendment, the last sentence of the Fifth Amendment, last clause of the Fifth Amendment says, you basically can't take people's money and use it for government, can't take people's property and use it for government works. And this is, they're taking cash. So you replace cash with cash. So Paul Ryan's great engineering feat in his career, unlike getting patents, he built a pipeline directly from the U.S. Treasury to the hedge fund investors.
Wow.
That's what he did. Paul Ryan built a pipeline.
I don't suppose George Soros is getting any of that money.
You know, I don't know. But I'm looking at a letter that was sent to me by Paul Singer's attorneys, because I mentioned that one of Paul Ryan's senior advisors, his name is Dan Senor. Dan Senor is on the payroll for Paul Singer. And so when the Billy Bush tapes were released, you remember all the hubbub
yes.
that went on about that?
Sure.
Dan Senor on Twitter was coaching the media on how to attack then candidate Trump.
Wow.
And Paul Ryan immediately disinvited candidate Trump from an event here in Wisconsin. And we saw where Breitbart released the audio of Paul Ryan talking to the members saying he will not defend Donald Trump, not now, not ever. And that is the only campaign promise that Paul Ryan has kept.
Wow.
Right? Only one.
Wow. That's astonishing. It's somehow both shocking and yet not. I am not surprised at all that Paul Ryan would be behind some of that. So getting back to your district there, Paul Ryan is clearly a globalist, but he campaigns like a conservative. He is clearly for amnesty. I mean, just name your issue. He has to be dragged kicking and screaming to any conservative issue. How does Paul Ryan manage to fool so many people so much of the time?
Well, he spent $10.6 million against me the last time. Paul Ryan brings home money to the GOP in Wisconsin. Paul Ryan, you are hard-pressed to ever hear to this day, I've never seen a conservative, a pseudo-conservative news outlet. I call them payroll pundits here in Wisconsin. They won't say anything bad about Paul Ryan. I mean, they excoriated candidate Trump here in Wisconsin, and yet President Trump was elected in this district. And so Paul Ryan's having a tough time now because President Trump's not afraid to call Speaker Ryan out, and he has been way too kind to him in my estimation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. What's the mood there of people within your district? Are they starting to get a little ticked off at Ryan because of his lack of support for Trump?
Absolutely. And, you know, people who look at him and say, you know, I've had it. If he doesn't do this, that's the last straw. If he doesn't do this, it's the last straw. And so, you know, I mentally tick that box with people when I hear them say that, because I know that's another vote coming my way. I know it is. And yet, I go out and I talk to these people and I say, look, I'm just a man. You're just a man or a woman. And there's only so much we can do. But we're God's hands and feet, all of us. All of us are. And the only thing that can go up against a bad nation is a good nation. If we have a bunch of good people running for Congress, a bunch of good people running for Senate, good person running for president, we're going to do well. Same thing goes on in your local school district, in your statewide races. We have to have good people running for those offices. And I've made this analogy before, that when 2016 happened, a big wave crashed on the shore and the water pulled back, and there stood Donald Trump. 2018, another wave's coming in. When it crashes and pulls back, you're going to see a bunch of good candidates who ran in support of President Trump, in support of America First principles. Forget Donald Trump for a minute. Forget the president. He ran on good trade deals, protecting the border, securing the border, building up U.S. infrastructure, stopping this rampant Muslim immigration and this fake Refugee Resettlement Act, holding sanctuary cities to U.S. law, right?
Repeal and replace Obamacare.
Yeah, kill Obamacare. So what has Paul Ryan done? He's worked against all of those things. So, you know, whether it's Kelly Ward out in Arizona, or it's Corey Stewart in Virginia, or it's Omar Navarro in Maxine Waters' district, or, you know, I could continue naming and naming and naming people here who are running, who we need to support, and we will support. We will support those America First candidates, because these globalists, these rhinos, they're part of the Uniparty. They might have a R on their badge, but it could easily be replaced with a D, easily, because they're really Uniparty people. They are not America First people. So,
well, that's, you know, we only got about a minute here, but let's say that you do primary out Paul Ryan. Do you think that he would win as a Democrat?
No. I think my task is to beat Paul Ryan in the primary, and then, you know, honestly, the three people in the district who are running besides me, they all want single payer, including Paul Ryan. Randy Bryce is this iron broker. He's a AstroTurf candidate out of New York City. He's run for several things and never won. And then we've got a school board member running out of Janesville. And they all want single payer. They all want amnesty. They want open borders and kumbaya. None of them are for securing the border or America First. So, including Speaker Ryan.
Yeah, wow. Okay, let's go and take a break there. Stay with us. We're going to have more with Paul Nealon. His website is electnealon.com or paulnealon.com. Nealon is N-E-H-L-E-N. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now with Paul Nealon. He's a Wisconsin businessman running against spineless Paul Ryan for the Republican nomination for Wisconsin 1. You can visit his website at electnealon.com or paulnealon.com, and Nealon is N-E-H-L-E-N. You can also find his book, Wage the Battle, on Amazon.com as well, and we'll link all of that up on iSpyRadio.com. So, Paul, in the time that we have left, would like to talk to you a little bit about DACA. I mean, the Dreamers, Trump had this meeting with Democrats to discuss it, among other things, and then immediately after, Pelosi and Schumer rushed to the mic and basically tried to say they'd won on DACA and there would be no deal on the wall. Trump is saying that there is no such deal, or just the discussions. But conservatives like Ann Coulter were quick to condemn this, despite there being no evidence of anything that was actually discussed other than Nancy Pelosi running at the mouth. But doesn't this really point to the real problem here, is that the current crop of Republicans in Congress?
Yeah, I mean, you could see Paul Ryan in an alternate universe stepping up and saying there's going to be a wall. I mean, Paul Ryan made this slick video of it's time for a wall, you know, showed him riding on horseback and riding in a boat and flying in a helicopter. I mean, you know, Super Paul Ryan to the rescue. We're going to build a wall. Nobody in the district believed that at all. Mm. Nobody. Mm. And so I think that, look, I think Ann Coulter's right to be upset. Absolutely right. She wrote President Trump's immigration policy. Take a look at Adios America. She wrote Trump's immigration policy, and she's right, and Kris Kobach is right. And look, there's going to be people like me who are going to be cautiously optimistic that Trump's going to move in the right direction. Steve Bannon was right. I mean, we got to take the good with the bad. The other answer was Hillary Clinton, one of those 16 rhinos that ran. I mean, if we don't get 100% of the things that we want out of Donald Trump, but we get 98% of them, 95%
that's
of them,
still that's far still better. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And
I am
that's
not for DACA, not now, not ever. I want to see a wall. I want to see all those folks deported. And those countries can decide whether they go to the end of the line or the front of the line. Hmm. I don't care. But I'll tell you, they got to do it legally, because there's people in my district who immigrated here legally. And they want to see it done legally.
Yeah.
And so it's not about race. It's not about black or white or yellow or brown or anything. It's about the rule of law.
Exactly.
And we've got to enforce the rule of law.
Exactly. And if you just grant amnesty, all that's going to do is encourage yet a new wave of DACAs.
Right.
I mean, it will just never end. In terms of your policies versus Ryan, why don't you talk to us a little bit about where you differ with him? Let's maybe start especially with the tax overhaul and reduction.
Well, I think that we ought to be at 12% for a corporate tax. Paul Ryan thinks we ought to be at 25%. And the reason he says 25 is because big corporations, I used to run them, Fortune 500, have a lot of tax accountants and tax attorneys who reduce the effective tax rate way below 25% or below 39%. So 12% will get us below Ireland. It'll get us below Canada. We will have the biggest manufacturing renaissance in this country. It will blow your mind. So we need to do that. And when Paul Ryan puts all of these hooks and these special gimmicks and things, look, Paul Ryan doesn't know better than you do about your health care. He has no business suggesting that this is a qualified plan or that's a qualified plan. They need to have a repeal Obamacare vote, a full repeal vote. In the meantime, they need to pass a law that says insurance companies can sell any product anywhere in the country contrary to local laws and regulations, that it overrides them. That's what the Commerce Clause is there for. And that's what Paul Ryan needs to be working on, because I should be able to decide in a cafeteria-style plan, I want insurance for broken bones and allergies, and you could decide you want it for cancer and whatever else, and we should be fine that way. That is up to us. It's not up to Paul Ryan and Congress to decide what's qualified. However, big insurance companies are pumping a lot of money into candidates' pockets, so that's why they're making the decisions they are.
Yeah, well, absolutely. In terms of trade, what are your overall positions on that, and where do you, differ from with Paul Ryan?
I love trade. I've done it all my life. I've run very successful businesses all around the globe, heavily engineered product. Bilateral trade agreements are the only agreements. Every airline negotiates a bilateral agreement with every airport all around the globe. It makes sense. It makes sense on the micro scale. It makes sense on the macro scale.
Hmm. Well, apparently we are out of time. I'll fix that in post. We got about 30 seconds with you. How can those of us watching your race from the outside, how can they help you?
Donate money. Once you get past policy, it is money and manpower. Go to my website, electneilan.com. You can sign up to help. You can be a caller. You can call into the district. There's all sorts of ways you can help, but go to my website, and there's Take Action page. My average donation size was under $50 last time. We can do this with your help. So
sure.
I would encourage your listeners to go there.
Absolutely. All right. And again, we'll link all of that up on iSpyRadio.com. Paul Neilan, thank you so much for your time today, and best of luck.
Thank you guys so much. God bless.
That is all of our time for today. Be sure to check out iSpyRadio.com. That's the letter I, iSpyRadio.com, for links mentioned during today's show. We'll have all of Brendan's articles up there and also links to Paul Neelan's website so that you can help support him. While you're there, be sure to check out our advertisers. If we had 1,000 people clicking 1,000 ads, suddenly we'd be rolling in dough just like a globalist politician. Well, be sure to share all of that with your friends on Facebook and Twitter, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.